I'm Noam Chomsky. You're listening to CFMU 93.3.
A lot of science in the past, Babylonians, Egyptians, etc., have always looked to the stars for sciences, for maths and stuff. And I guess a bit of that grabbed hold of me, and I've always been looking above and getting a bit of inspiration from there. And it's just, it's cool stuff, especially when you start talking about cosmology science, like you're talking about black holes and origin of the universe and fate of the universe. Yeah, everybody likes to talk about big subjects, right? The big, like, whys and hows, and that's things that have always appealed to me. And I guess that's why I've always stayed in astronomy.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I'm 7 years old. My interest with astronomy when I was, let's see, 5, I think. Or is it 4? I'm going to talk about Neptune. Neptune has 11 moons. 3 of them have just been discovered. People used to think that Neptune had 8 moons. So, and then 3 more were found. Neptune is the 8th planet from the sun. And sometimes it's the 9th planet, sometimes it's the 8th planet. Pluto and Neptune trade places sometimes. Neptune is one of the gas giants. And it's a blue planet. Neptune was named after the god of water.
Hi, I'm Dan Milisalovich. I'm a student here at McMaster University in the Arts and Science program, combining with physics. I'm from Stony Creek originally.
How does it feel to have discovered 3 new moons of Neptune?
It's fantastic, actually. Indescribable, really. Lots of fun. In the end, I realized I was really just at the right place at the right time, but I like to think that good things happen for good reason, so...
Do you get to name them?
That's always the first question everybody asks me. Possibly. Hopefully, yes. There's a lot of people involved with this survey. Like, I have to remember, I was just a student involved, and I was the one that was actually looking at the pictures, trying to find the moon segments. So I was the first one to visually see some kind of phenomena going on in these slides. So I do lay claim to at least be involved. And we have found quite a few moons. At this point, it's 5 total, maybe more from what I understand. And with that, there's about 5 or 6 people involved. It would be nice if I would be associated with one of them. So it is possible. But these things, again, they take time. Like, they've been confirmed now, but now the path should be followed even more. And then it goes through a big naming process as well with the international community. But in the end, I might just get to name one, yeah. It's possible. I got calls from lots of family that I hadn't heard for a while, and I got a letter from a grade 2 elementary school teacher as well, so that felt really good. One of those comments, oh, I always knew you'd do well. And certainly I got some, it was fun to hear my name on CNN, right, and CBC News, etc., you know, I got a bit of a kick off of that. Well, so yeah, I've gotten quite a few from all around. It's just been fantastic. These are my 15 minutes of fame, and I've enjoyed it very much. In terms of the astronomy, what kind of importance? Well, it means different things to different people. To some, it's like, well, just another couple moons to add to the textbooks for Neptune, and it was, in the past was Uranus, right? For others, though, that are studying structure of a solar system, right, trying to find its formation, it does lend a lot of things. In general, it's about how the formation of Neptune came to be, how it came to have all these moons, because these moons, from what I understand, are at highly inclined and irregular orbits. So there's always theories about how Neptune came to have these moons. Were they big chunks of rock, asteroids that came by Neptune and were captured in by the orbit, or were they initially there during the whole formation of the solar system? How come no one else discovered them? That's good. That's actually a very valid question, because we had in 89, was it, or early 90s, it was the Voyager 2 mission, right, that went out there and found a whole slew of moons, right? And you would think that a satellite coming by so close to the planet should be able to pick up all the moons. But you have to realize, one, these are very small objects, and they don't give off much light. Two, they're at very irregular places where you would normally not find moons, right? And three, a satellite has a rather narrow field of vision when it takes images. So it was principally there to look at Neptune and take those pictures of it, right? And so it could see it in the vicinity as well, but not so distant and not when they're so small and faint. So we were specifically looking for satellites, looking for moons in areas where it hadn't been looked before, and that's why they came up. Let me go through the process. So from I remember, it was Dr. Kavlars, and he was in Chile using the CTIO telescope, taking a bunch of data in the area. Now, he uses a specific technique that it's a bit complex to explain, but one, step one, take picture of the sky and put it onto CCD images. That's like kind of like a digital camera, same kind of images, right? It's a different kind of technique. It's not just a matter of taking snapshots, right? It would be, imagine if you point a camera at the sky, right? And if you leave the shutter open for a long time, you know how star trails form across, right? Because the Earth rotates. So it seems as though the stars is going across the sky, but it's actually us. So now imagine if you were to track the camera at the same rate that those stars go across. Well, then all the stars would remain fixed as little points, right? But what if we didn't go at the same rate as the stars, but we went at the same rate as the moons were going across the sky, right? Well, then all the stars would still kind of smudge out, but those points that would remain would be the moons that would be traveling at that rate, right? Now, we know by Kepler's laws and et cetera, how fast moons or satellites are in that area should be traveling. So if we can match it and we can find that rate, boom, we have a candidate. So that's what my job was to look through all these images that have been compiled and look for those little pencil beams, those little points, as opposed to all the smudging, see if we could find moons. So that is, at the end of the day, that's all I did pretty much, was look through frame by frame, thousands of frames at times, to look for those little points. We've tried, it's getting much better to be all computer done, right? There's a lot of problems involved, but at that point, there was no good method to do it, so it was all by eye. Yeah. A lot of patience, yeah. A lot of patience, as opposed to skill. how did I land the job? Well, I guess three summers back, I worked for DeFasco for 2 months, and then I got an offer from McMaster for a job. It was with Dr. Kavlars, and that's when I started the survey of Kuiper Belt objects. Those are objects in the same area as Neptune. It's a belt of like comets in the vicinity. So worked with him, got along really well, and then talked throughout the year, and they said, well, hey, Dan, why don't you come back for another summer? I said, I'd love to. So at the beginning of my summer was spent looking for these Kuiper Belt objects. The first summer, I didn't find any. But that summer I had found two objects, comets, and I got to label them. That was a find. That for me was enough for a summer, to find two comets, to label them and to report them, and that's all been recorded. But then, towards the end, we started shifting focus to these satellites around Uranus and Neptune. And he sent me... I'm getting a bit out of track of what your question was, but... So, I had a bunch of data that he had taken with this data from CTIO, and I started looking through it, and he just dumped it on me as like, well, we expect something to be there, we don't know, but have a look. And I've always been testing the images so to make sure it works well. So it was always just, I wouldn't really expect anything. I'd think, oh, that would be a fake candidate, etc. Because with any image, we always have fake candidates to make sure that I don't mistaken something real for something fake or background. So, and I started coming across, and I started finding ones that weren't fakes, like that were real. I'm like, this is interesting, right? So I'd followed up, and I pointed this out to JJ. He was like, well, keep on looking, see what else you can find. So I did that with the Uranus tracks. Those led to the two moons that we announced in October, I believe. And then I started with the ones around Neptune, and they just started popping up. And there's were the three. And so, yeah, that's how it all came about. Astronomy. Yeah, I guess I can trace it all back to my grade 2 project in astronomy with Mr. George Wolastik, he's out there. I still remember him and having that astronomy project. It was fantastic. And it was an immediate hook, because we got to look at pictures of stars, and he encouraged us to look up at the sky. And from there, I was just always fascinated. I'd look at the shows on the Discovery Channel, etc. I'd find movies on whatever I can, and literature. I don't know, the stars have somehow grab me. They have a curiosity about them. And it's been there for ages, you know? Like, a lot of science in the past, Babylonians, Egyptians, etc. I've always looked to the stars for sciences, for maths and stuff. And I guess a bit of that grabbed hold of me, and I've always been looking above and getting a bit of inspiration from there. And it's cool stuff, especially when you start talking about cosmology science, like you're talking about black holes and origin of the universe and fate of the universe. Yeah, everybody likes to talk about big subjects, right? The big, like, whys and hows, and that's things that have always appealed to me. And I guess that's why I've always stayed in astronomy. Yeah.
You are listening to Radio Free School on
I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends.
Free Radio, Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 97.9 FM, and Fredericton, New Brunswick.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine?
Thank you. describe the moons?
Can I describe them? Yes and no. Haven't read the reports that they're going to be publishing on it, but what I can tell you is, yes, they're very small. I think they're anywhere in the order of 16 kilometers to 25 kilometers. Some maybe even be a bit larger. We call them satellites. We don't actually call them moons. It's all with the nomenclature. It's very confusing. I don't even understand it sometimes. But I believe we call these satellites because, well, I know why they call them satellites, because they're orbiting around the planet. And you can consider them moons because they're orbiting around and they are of significant size. Asteroids, we just normally consider those that are going around the sun, right? Especially those around the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. So there's a distinction. They are, like, sure, 16 kilometers may not sound much, but it is larger than, say, a general asteroid, from what I remember, which can be anywhere in, like, 5 kilometers wide, etc. But of significance here is the fact that these are orbiting around Neptune, right? So we do classify them as satellites. This comes back to the theories of how these moons got there, right? So why is it that the Earth has one and those extrasolar planets? We're talking about Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and Uranus. Why do they have so many moons in comparison? Saturn's counts over 20, from what I understand, and Jupiter is in the same area. That comes into the whole theories of solar system formation, etc. Looking into the dynamics, they can build theories as to why, when the Earth was accreting in the formation disk, that was the solar system to begin with lots of numbers and equations, it kind of starts making sense why we would only get one or two moons for the close planets, and then why there would be a lot more for the bigger ones that are further out. A lot of times, the ones that are further out, they have a lot of gravity, so they have a tendency to suck in passing asteroids or whatever the case may be, and so they would be captured satellites. And some of them that are along the ecliptic or not too far off, those would be just ones that formed during the planet's formation itself. It just comes down to, I guess, when the initial solar system was formed, right? How does it... that's what they're trying to figure out, actually. That's a good question. The summer before, Kavlars and a group had actually found a whole new slew of moons around Saturn. And I mean, like, 10 new moons that were people hadn't looked before. So this is, I guess they're in the business of looking for moons, this group. And it's just, they've been able to use this technique, this we call it blinking, right? That it has worked really well to find these new candidates. So anyway, these moons around Saturn led into the idea that, well, if they're at these elliptical orbits and highly inclined where people haven't looked before, well, willing to bet that if you look around Uranus and Neptune, you'll probably find new moons as well. So that was the thinking behind that. One thing this job definitely taught me was perseverance and to bear in mind long-term goals as opposed to immediate situation. I mentioned that just because the majority of the summer was a lot of, I won't say boring, but tedious work, right? Looking through all those images. You always have to kind of bear in mind the larger goal, the grander scheme of things when you do that kind of work. So to always be questioning, well, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life? And is this really something that I want to do? But then when you get a payoff like that, and even it shouldn't have to be the payoff itself, but the potential payoff, I think, was just definitely worth it. Looking back, I'm so happy and glad that I did all that, and it was all worth it, all worthwhile. Yeah. The one thing I definitely learned over the past summers, math, yes, but definitely computers. It's all computers. I was hoping to try and get away with it. Computers are a great tool, but I don't like using it too much. But no, these days astronomy is very much so computers. The hand, it's applied computing. So I use that every day, obviously for the sighting, but also for matching the orbits, like predicting the path where it would lay. It's a lot of math involved with there, and it's just you can't do it by hand, so the computers have to do all that kind of analysis for you. Yeah, definitely, if you're going to get into astronomy, be sure to be good with the computers, yeah, and the math that follows with it. Yeah. Plans for the future. Well, that's funny. I'll be semi-frank with you, and I've always had little boy's dream of, like, being an astronaut. That's probably from grade two on. That's been always a motivating goal, right? And goals have changed since then. You know, you start putting things in perspective and how to go about that dream, whether it would actually transpire, because, you know, there's very few people in the world that are astronauts. Firstly, to be a Canadian astronaut, that number is very low, right? And to be an American astronaut, you have to go down the States, U.S. citizen, a lot involved there, right? But just because I don't necessarily see it happening doesn't mean I can't take a path that could eventually lead there. So that's the attitude I've taken. I'd love to work for NASA one day, or the CSA especially. It's Canadian Space Agency. So that's kind of where I've kind of directed my studies, keeping that in mind in the long term. But immediately, I've been looking to go on for a master's and then a PhD in physics. And I always loved teaching, so I'm going to keep that close at hand at all times. But yeah, as for long-term goals, that's something that I've always kept with me. Just see where things lead. Yeah. What do they say? They say shoot for the moon, at least you'll land amongst the stars, right? So the problem with big cities is that it drowns that city light, so people lose that fascination with the stars. They can't look up and see the Milky Way, which is a beautiful wonder. Like, that is by far one of the most beautiful things anybody can look up and see, when you see the whole span of the Milky Way across the sky. But I rarely see that here, right? I rarely see that here. So as for favorite spots, just around here, along the escarpment, I'll sometimes find things, because it's a little out of the way, or in Dundas. But generally, when I really want to see things, I need to get out of the city. I've gone to Starfest. It's a great little thing for all these astronomers. It's in, I believe, in Mount Forest. Like, you really need to go just away from here, and generally north is better. Place in Severn Falls is beautiful at night.
Thank you. have a star to throw me a beam or two. Wished on a star and asked for a dream or two. I'd look for every loveliness, it all came true. I wished on the moon.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper, I'm gonna daub myself with glue, stick some stamps on the top of my head, I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.